network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of February 5th, 2019, and episode number 383. And of course, this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, and we are live on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. Yes, I'm back. I've got the nickname Mr. Vacation, and I got another one coming up a couple months. Well, actually, a month from now, so in March. So we'll cross that bridge when we find it. But yeah, I've had 2 weeks off, and only really one of them did I want to have off. Last week I was a little bit under the weather, had a little bit of a voice issue. I felt okay, but voice was gone. And a lot of people asking me questions, a lot of people asking me what I was doing out in Arizona. I kind of talked about it a little bit. I won't talk too much about it tonight. We got a lot of news in the pipeline tonight, but basically I signed up to do a Cleveland Indians fantasy camp. So basically a lot of guys over 30 and some guys in their 60s, 98 of us convened at the Goodyear complex that hosts the Cleveland Indians and the Cincinnati Reds. They actually kind of have a combined complex. Each complex is separated, but they have the main stadium that they play spring training games at, and Goodyear is a dual effort. So it's Cincinnati Reds and Cleveland Indians. But we went down there. They actually had the Reds fantasy camp was going on at the same time. But essentially, so 98 of us, they split us into 8 teams. We actually had to show off our talents in front of 16 former major league players, as well as one of them was a former manager. Mike Hargrove was there as well. So and then we got divvied up into 8 teams. We played a 6-game season. And then we played a playoff, a 1-day playoff. So it was basically a miniature season in a week's time. We played 9 baseball games, essentially. And I was a little tired. I was a little wore out. It's hard enough to play 1 baseball game on a Saturday afternoon at my age, but you try to do 2 a day for a week, and it's a lot. Thank goodness we had the use of some of the trainers that actually attend the minor league squads. Were there to help us recuperate and be able to walk back to the hotel. Of course, we had a couple of kegs on the patio that helped as well, but that's a different story. But it was a fantastic time. It was a dream come true for me as a baseball fan and a Cleveland Indians fan since I was a little kid, and be able to see, not just see and meet and hang out with these guys, but to actually learn baseball from them, to be out there and have Mike Hargrove pull me aside and tell me about my swing. I mean, it was fantastic. And hardly really had any time to ourselves. It was basically getting up at 5 in the morning, going to bed at about 9 o'clock at night, and we maybe had 2 hours to ourselves, basically, and that was just to go out and eat and drink and be merry between having meetings and everything else that we were doing. But it was a lot of fun, and yeah, I didn't have time. I was in Phoenix twice. We were hanging out. It was on the 8th floor of the really nice hotel, but I didn't see anything. I did keep my eyes out, especially in the morning. I was looking for strange lights in the sky. It was weird because on our final game that I played, I should say second to last game, on Thursday night, my team was the best in their division, a division with only 4 teams. We were the best in ours. We actually made the World Series. So we got to play at Goodyear Park under the lights. After a long day of, we played a game earlier that day, but we got to play out there at night. Game started a little after 5. It was 68 degrees at game time. When the game was over about 7 o'clock, it was about 49, 48. It was a little chilly. It's cold. It was very cold. I was cold in the morning, about 35. Granted, at home, yeah, it was pretty cold here in Northeast Ohio, so I had it made. But we got to play the World Series game. Again, Goodyear Park is where the Indians and the Reds share that home as their spring training home. And after the game is over, there was some jets that went over the stadium that were no lights. No lights on these aircraft whatsoever. They were fighter jets, but there's a couple of bases out there, so they were just scrambling and doing their stuff. But it was kind of cool. Didn't get to see anything paranormal, unfortunately, but I kind of wasn't there for that. It was a great time. Yeah, my legs hurt for days, but I'm well. We did have, again, hot tub, cold tub, massages, all that fun stuff. But, yeah, I don't know. And I get to play another game later this year, sometime in the spring, actually early summer, down at Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. So that's going to be fun to actually get there on the field and play a game there. But that's baseball, and we're here for the paranormal, right? And we've got plenty of stuff in store for you. And, yeah, when I got home, it was negative temperatures, dry out there in Arizona. Very dry, and I think that kind of messed up my voice. And then, of course, traveling. You go on an airplane, it seems like everybody's sick on the airplane. So, yeah, Saturday, my trip home, I didn't feel so well. And by Monday, I still went to work, but I didn't feel all that great. And I had no voice last week. But alas, I hope it's over. I was a little worried about the government shutdown, but I'll tell you, my TSA experience was very, very quick. I was in and out from Cleveland Hopkins Airport, 11 and a half minutes standing in line, people complaining about how long the line was. 11 and a half minutes we were through, and I sat there and waited for my plane for 2.5 hours. But at least we left. That was the morning of the really bad snowstorm. I forget what the name of it was that kind of crippled Ohio. A lot of flights were canceled. I made it. Actually flew to Detroit, which is crazy, but we made it out of there as well. But coming home through Phoenix, my TSA experience was 5.5 minutes. It was very quick. So hats off to them. Anybody out there that was on furlough for your time, I appreciate you coming to work. I know it's got to be hard, but thank goodness that's over with. Anyway, yes. Paranormal News Insider. That's what we're here for. And this is episode number 383. And this week, we're going to talk some stuff. Hopefully, you haven't heard about some of this news. Now, I'm going to go over a story that happened last week because it's pretty much the biggest story of the year, I would say. And we're going to talk about SETI. We're going to talk about MUFON. We're going to talk about people in your closet. And yes, we're going to talk about a boy and his bear. Or was it a Bigfoot? And we're also going to talk about, well, I wasn't there. It was close. But Nevada. Sad incident that happened out there. Not sure if you heard about that. We're going to cover a lot here in the next, 50 minutes now. But first, I want to mention an event. It's getting close. I can't believe how close this is getting. A big event we've got coming up at the end of May, beginning of June, May 31st through June 2nd, 2019. It's the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. It's taking place at Benner's Meadow Run Campground in Farmington, Pennsylvania. Now, tickets are not only on sale, but they're disappearing fast. Amazingly, there's been over 300 tickets already sold for this event. They're disappearing quick. There's only, I believe, 500 total. So over the weekend, Eric Altman, who's putting this thing on for the third time in the last 4 years, he's announced that there were 184 tickets remaining. That's it. Once those are gone, that's it. You'll be turned away at the door. Well, there's not really a door there. It's kind of out in the woods. But I guess you'll be turned back by the pond that's there, by the campground there. So of the 184 tickets, and this was over the weekend, so I don't know, it could be a lot less by now. There was 84 discounted priced tickets. Those are the ones you want to get. Get them quick. If you haven't gotten your tickets for this event and you really want to go, you really want to look at getting tickets this week as soon as possible. It's going to be sold out. I guarantee you, sold out in the next couple of weeks. You'll also, if you do get tickets or you've gotten tickets, you're going to want to lock in some lodging for the event as soon as possible. The ticket just gets you into the event. It doesn't get you into the campground. So if you want to stay at the campground, which I highly recommend, you'll be able to rub elbows with all the people all weekend long. You don't have to travel far to take a nap, get rested up when we do our day and night hikes, things like that. You don't really want to have to travel all over the place. Trust me. You want to get into the campground as quick as possible. I'm sure most of, if not all of the campsites are taken up, but if you have an RV, you got a van, you got a Yugo. I don't know if you can sleep in a Yugo, but you might want to look at the RV area for that. Then celebrity guests are massive. Like it's an honor for me to have been asked to be here as a speaker. When I look at the celebrity guests that are going to be here, guests include the Appalachian Investigators of Mysterious Sightings, or AIMS, or in other words, the guys from the Mountain Monsters television show. They'll actually be making their second straight appearance. Also have Bill Brock, host of the television show Monsters Underground, Ken Gerhard, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, and Cliff Barackman. Of Finding Bigfoot will also be on hand. Barackman just announced a few days ago, Stacy Brown Jr. will also be attending. The latest announcement here, Stacy Brown Jr. appears on Spike TV's $10 million Bigfoot bounty. He's also a filmmaker and musician and spends his time searching for the elusive skunk ape down in the Florida swamps. And again, this doesn't even count the 12 speakers, workshop hosts, other special guests, including Paranormal King Radio's own Lon Strickler and myself will both be there on hand. Excited to hang out with some friends and fellow speakers, Ron Murphy, Steve Coles, Dave Dragason, Rick Fisher, Stan Gordon, Jay Bachochin. Jay is going to be there along with his son Blake, debuting his movie Finding Jay. And other speakers include Paul G. Johnson, Dave Spinks, David Weatherly, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and the 2017 Cryptozoologist of the Year, Seth Breedlove. Truly the experience of a lifetime, as they say. But I say, it's going to be intense. Intense. You get a camping adventure? Intense. Okay, well, I'll let that go. Yeah. So anyway, PABigfootCampingAdventure.com. That's where you're going to want to go if you want to get tickets. Yeah, you better get there ASAP, as they say. And that stands for as soon as possible. Because tickets are going to be disappearing pretty quick. 184 left at that last count over the weekend and dwindling. So anyway, to the paranormal news we go. And UFO news. Sorry, kids, no cryptid news this week. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. I'm sure there's something going on out there somewhere, but not in my news, not tonight. But anyway, 1960, Frank Drake conducted the first modern attempt to find signals from potential intelligent extraterrestrials by using the radio telescope in Green Bank, North Carolina. The search for extraterrestrial intelligence was born, and others spent time and money in the search for signals from outer space. Now, NASA had funded studies, but did not have a formal presence in the SETI program, or Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, until 1992. But Congress was quick to cancel this effort, and NASA has been on the sidelines ever since. However, astronomer Jason Wright is one of the group of scientists that feels NASA needs to get back into the SETI program and take what he calls, quote, techno signatures, unquote, more seriously. Now, Wright is a part of a group that are writing papers to urge NASA to spend money on SETI to bring the program out of the dark ages and into modern times, just as their focus on exoplanet discovery has it's come light years in the last decade. That's due to, you know, the involvement, bringing a lot of scientists on board. And whereas SETI has just basically been, I guess you'd just call a few random mad scientists out there trying to collect data from these large telescopes and running a lot of different formal or informal studies, I should say, on collecting this information. But getting the mainstream scientists behind a SETI program would really move this ahead very quick. So technosignatures. Now, these refer to any sign of alien technology from radio signals to waste heat. The hope for Wright is that NASA will take this search seriously. And he says, quote, if NASA were to declare technosignatures a scientific priority, then we would be able to apply for money to work on it. We would be able to train students to do it. Then we could catch up to more mature fields of study of astronomy, unquote. So, again, if we can get this funded, if we get NASA involved with SETI, then a lot more hands, a lot more people will be involved, and that will advance what SETI has been able to do light years, very quickly in a short amount of time. Guarantee it. As long as people take it seriously. Now, the main kind of roadblock here is that it has to go through Congress. So the pressing issue is that Congress will determine at the end of the year 2020 what the astronomical community's priorities will be through what's called the Astro 2020, a decadal survey on astronomy and astrophysics. This is basically a report which will dictate what funds get funded for the next decade, and Wright hopes that the papers his group is putting together will make that cut. Wright is no stranger to the stage of SETI, as he was actually one of the astronomers that proposed that the Tabby's star, which was that star that was flickering, we talked about that the last 2 years, was flickering due to a potential alien megastructure that had been built around it. That was he was one of the people that kind of hypothesized about that. Granted, after more data was collected and disseminated, he was also part of the group that debunked that hypothesis and thought that it was more than likely dust surrounding it causing the flickering. Granted, they still can't agree on anything concerning Tabby's star, but more than likely not an alien megastructure. But who knows? We don't at this point. But I would hope. I mean, that's going to be a long time. 10 years of money is determined, wrapped up for astronomy and astrophysics. That if SETI doesn't get into NASA or get a little bit more mainstream, it's gonna fall to the wayside. It's really going to be a disappearing kind of thing because with the exoplanet discoveries that are going on right now, a lot more time is being spent at these radio telescopes collecting other data and other information as the regular telescopes are being tied up for these exoplanet kind of like backup information. So it's going to be harder and harder for SETI, any SETI program or anybody out there with money trying to get telescope time to search for signals unless NASA can land basically a contract for this. So we'll have to keep an eye on this, on the Astro 2020 decadal survey on astronomy and astrophysics. When that gets released and Congress determines what scientists do, that's kind of scary. Congress determines what science is going to focus on. I don't know if I really agree with that, but I guess that's where the money comes from. So now we have the MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, citing statistics, and kind of wasn't going to talk about this. I was a little upset about this because I have these for December, but I don't have them for November. Never got them. I'm no longer a MUFON member, but I still get their emails and some communications, and I know a few people that sometimes can get me the sightings. But a lot of people, more people day by day, week by week, are dropping out of MUFON for different reasons. So I'm losing a lot of my contacts within the organization. And nobody has received these November stats for whatever reason, whatever's going on. I don't know. Maybe it's a cover-up. I'm not sure. But I do have the December ones. I was hoping to be able to wrap up 2018 as I did 2017 and 16 and 15 with MUFON and their antics. Well, they're getting a new, basically a new system to hold all of their case management, a new case management system. They've been talking about that, though, my gosh, for at least 10 years now. So I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But I'm not even making predictions. I don't even remember what my predictions were from way back when. But not doing that anymore. I don't even know if this could be the last time I cover the MUFON stats. They're really insignificant. But I like looking at these numbers just because they're numbers. And just because maybe there's something hidden in these, but you'd have to have access to the case management system, which I no longer do, to really disseminate these cases on an individual basis. So with the month of December of 2018, there was a total of 598 sightings, which were reported to MUFON last year, or I should say, I guess 2 years ago, 2017, there was a total of 737 total reports. But you look back in 2016, there was 491. In 2015, there was 624. So it kind of goes all over the place over the course of the last 4 years. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and one of which we'll talk about at the end of this segment. So of these 598 total sightings in December of 2018, the United States ranked number one with 391 total sightings. Well, hopefully it should, because MUFON is based here, and a lot of other countries have their own UFO reporting systems, and some other countries don't really care too much about UFOs either. So looking at, let's see, I guess that's 2017, there was 507 U.S. sightings in December. So second on the list this year, well, not really this year, I guess 2018 December, second on the list was the United Kingdom with 47. Canada, our neighbors to the north, was next with 41. Australia had 15. Chile had 12. France had 10. India, Italy, and Brazil had 7 reports each, and South Africa turned in 5 reports for December. Now, there was 38 other countries that turned in 3 or less reports, with 26 of these turning in 1 report each. Now, I always find this interesting. So of these 38 other countries, one of these countries had 2 sightings, and this was Antarctica. And I always think that's significant to me, because a majority of the people that are in Antarctica are scientists. So scientists are reporting UFO sightings, which is kind of cool. But who knows? Could have been weather balloons down there. Yes, Antarctica, which is in summertime. So people were saying, wow, it's temperatures like -5 here in Ohio, and it's like 65 down in Antarctica. Well, yeah, it's summertime. Of course it's warm down there. It's the southern hemisphere. It's summertime. Anyway, looking at the states here in the United States, breaking down the 391 total sightings, California was number one with 46 sightings. Well, they should be. California is the number one state in total population. So being number one in population, you should have the most sightings of other states. Texas was second with 34 reports. Florida followed with 29. Ohio and Arizona both had 18 reports each. Let's see, Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Illinois. I don't know, to each his own, I guess. They had 12 each. Wisconsin had 11. New Jersey had 9. Oklahoma and North Carolina had 8. Georgia, Oregon, Massachusetts, and New Mexico had 7 each. I thought there was noise in Illinois. Or maybe it's just quiet there. I don't know. It's pretty flat. Smells like cows. Maryland, Indiana, South Carolina, and Tennessee had 6 reports each. And 23 other states, including the District of Columbia, had 5 or less reports, with 5 states and the District of Columbia turning in 1 report each. And yes, I can pick on Illinois. I was born in a neighboring state of Indiana, so I'm allowed to. I have a pass. So I usually do the per capita sightings for states, and I kind of did a few here. So I did. Let's look at California first. So California, again, number one state as far as population here in the United States. It had also this month 46 sightings, way more than anybody else, 12 more than the next of Texas. But if you look at the per capita, so and I do it per 100,000, so it ends up being a fraction. Per 100,000, it would have been a 0.116. So basically 11% of a body. I don't know, is that like a left arm? Maybe a toe? I don't know. Of one person. Not even one person in 100,000 actually reported a UFO in California, despite having 46 reports. So New Mexico, and now they only turned in 7 reports. Not much. But they're number 36 in state population. So their per capita is 0.334. So a third of a person. Maybe the head and torso, I guess. I don't know. I don't really want to think about cutting people up here. But basically one third of a person. So basically one out of every 300,000 people, which is almost the entire population, reported a UFO in New Mexico. Then you go to Colorado, 21st in state population. They had 17 sightings, and their per capita is 0.298. Montana, which is 43rd in state population, they had a whopping 3 sightings, and they turned in a 0.282 per capita. Alaska, number 48 in state population, they had 2 sightings, and they turned in a 0.271 per capita. Arizona, number 14 in state population, had 18 sightings with a 0.251. So one quarter of one person, or one in 400,000, I guess you could say, turned in a report on average. And it kind of goes downhill from there. Idaho, the 39th state as far as population, 4 reports out of that state in the month of December, a 0.228. And Washington State, which is where I'd like to move, they had 14 sightings. They're 13th in state population, and that gives them a 0.186. So you can see how it's kind of why I like to look at those numbers, because it doesn't matter how many sightings each state has. It matters how many people are in that state as well. So it kind of gives you that number kind of gives you an idea as to the percentage, but it's still pretty insignificant. And one of the major problems I have with this, and I don't know if they're going to update in their new case management system, is the fact that these reports only tell you the month in which people actually reported these UFO sightings. It doesn't tell you when they actually happened. So not only would you have at the beginning of each month probably a lot of cases that happened the month prior, but you may have cases that happened 20, 30, or 40 years ago. in the system for December that might have popped in there. And yeah, I'd love to move to Washington, but probably not happening this year. Probably not happening next year. And probably not happening the year after that. Pretty much feel like I'm stuck in Ohio, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Now, one thing that I want to keep an eye on here, as far as these MUFON sighting statistics are concerned, and we've talked about it, well, obviously not last week or the week before, but the week before that we did. We talked about the television show Project Blue Book. So if that's going to have any kind of impact on the upcoming sighting statistics, because anytime you get a new show like this, you get people interested in UFOs, you get people interested in any kind of thing, all of a sudden you'll see a spike in these things. So the last major boom for MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, came a couple of years ago in the summertime, and this was right as the show Hangar One was at its peak. And a lot of people were watching that show, and a lot of people were really interested in UFOs, UFO sightings. It was on the news a lot, and they saw a huge spike in their sighting statistics. But again, a lot of those sightings were historical. They didn't really happen in those months. So I'm wondering if that's going to happen again. And as far as I know, tonight should be episode 5 of Project Blue Book. I did catch up. I caught up. It's a Monday I watched yesterday. What the hell? It would have been yesterday, Brian. Good guess. Yesterday I did catch up. I watched 3 and 4 or 2, 3 and 4. I forget which one. I don't know. It's, yeah, how do I say this nicely? It's nice at face value. Let me just put it that way. So it's entertaining to me at face value. For a television show, I think they do pretty good with the setting. The characters are nice. It's interesting. The conspiracy theory stuff is a little, I think, over the top. To me, it's beyond X-Files. It's almost way beyond what they did, even in the X-Files. And I thought the X-Files stuff was a little over the top. But the one thing that really, and I'll keep this G-rated, since this is a G-rated show, or I should say PG, maybe not G-rated, PG-rated. Just the historical, it's on the History Channel, for crying out loud. But one of the worst parts of the show is the historical side of it. It's way off. It's not even close. Every case is further and further away from the truth. The things that happened here are complete fiction. And it's just really bothering me that every time I see the logo of history pop up, and we're looking at this, and the beginning of the show, they say it's based on historical events. Very loosely based on historical events. And, you know, I'm wondering what it's doing for the next crop of UFO researchers out there. And, you know, UFOs are really irritating me a lot right now, especially with the types of stories that are in the paranormal news. I don't even cover most of these anymore because they're ridiculous. Of these videos that are obviously fake. People are lifting stuff off of YouTube and sending it to especially these United Kingdom news channels or websites and getting money. They're getting checks for these ridiculous videos and stories that are just completely made up. And it's just sad. It's just really annoying. UFOs are really a thorn in my side right now, and it's been that way for a while. But yikes. I was hoping this show would be a little bit more accurate. And you knew it was going to be entertaining. It's going to have to be a little bit of fictionalized. But man, it's way off. It just the cases, like, I thought I was going to get nitpicky with talking about some of these cases, but man. But I do have to say some of it is good. It's not a complete waste. But yeah, it's the historical part really, really annoyed me. With the the characters didn't do half the stuff that they said they did, or displaying that they did, or, you know, going through it. And so I think a lot of people are wondering, well, what's real and what's not real? And, you know, so that's kind of what their thing was, is that they wanted people to kind of look into it themselves, I guess. But I don't know if I said it or I wrote it somewhere, but I hadn't seen the episode yet about the Flatwoods Monster, which I think was the second one, but I haven't had a chance to talk about it yet. And I said, watch out for the owl. Well, little did I know that they made the owl the... really, it's kind of how the story was thought to be turned out. But the way they did it, I thought was really kind of cool. But I'm sure a lot of other people didn't like that. But that's kind of the consensus, that it was actually this exactly how they showed it. But Hynek didn't solve that. That's not how it went down. Yes, the owl was the alien. But that's what a lot of people thought. And they kind of explained it away, but that's kind of not how it happened. But anyway, kind of beat my head against the wall. But nonetheless, it's still an entertaining show, again, at face value. We don't have the X-Files anymore. That's over with. So I guess this is all we got. And yeah, the graphics are a little cruddy, to be nice. But it's only, I think it's only 9 episodes. So it's episode 5 should be tonight. So it's kind of wrapping up pretty quick here. So we'll enjoy it. We'll see what happens. And... I don't know. Just enjoy for what it is. It's not going to be accurate at all. I mean, it's TV. Anything on TV, it's there to sell cars. I mean, my goodness, anybody watch the debacle? I know King did. He watched the debacle last Sunday. The big game, because you can't say it here on the... I guess you can't say it on the radio. I don't know. I didn't get the ratings. I don't know how well... Was this one of the best Super Bowls ever? Seems like every year is the best Super Bowl ever. But I'm not sure how well they did. That was the worst. Wow, well, that's not good. Yeah, well, that's horrible. Well, lowest ratings in a decade. Ouch. Well, maybe change your halftime show. I mean, I don't know. Defense is great when you have a game that it's 3-0. I mean, it's still, defense wins championships, as they say. And everybody should know that. You can't expect to have a 28-24 game at halftime. I mean, that's just, to me, that's kind of like goes against two greatest teams. I mean, it should be about a lot of good defense. But, yeah, I used to say I watched it for the commercials. But the commercials are horrible anymore. So I do watch it for the game. I'm not a big football fan. I know that's horrible to say, living in Cleveland, the Cleveland area. But I don't know. Just the whole thing just kind of was a turnoff this year. But we'll see. Anyway, enough of UFOs. Enough of football. Enough of baseball. Let's talk some ghosts. Right? We haven't had a good ghost story in a while here on the show. And tonight... we got the best ghost story we've had in I don't know how long. Don't worry, nobody burned anything down this time. Nobody got caught. Well, I shouldn't say that. Let me stop myself before I get too far ahead of myself. So this ghost story is a kind of a cautionary tale I'm going to share tonight. It's... let's think about college campuses. You know, a lot of college campuses have a reputation of being haunted, right? And certainly many people live in or have visited what they would feel is a truly haunted home. Now, we've also had, if you're like me, you get a little older, you turn around, you look back, we've all had our share of skeletons in the closet. And you might wonder where I'm going with this. Well, a college student at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro got the scare of her life as her haunted apartment finally revealed itself over the weekend. The college junior, well, she told authorities that items like clothes were disappearing, and she found handprints on the bathroom wall in her apartment. She and her roommates were certain that this was a ghost. And well, they finally saw the truth this past Saturday. So the girl who identified herself as Maddie, which may or may not be her real name, as she actually refused to appear on camera as she fears for her safety. Now, Maddie said, quote, "I just hear rattling in my closet. It sounded like a raccoon in my closet. I'm like, who's there? And somebody answers me. He's like, oh, my name is Drew." Unquote. So that's what Maddie said. So, you know, a lot of people will call out. You know, they hear something in the house, in the room. They'll call out, who's there? What's going on? And hopefully, I don't know, maybe they don't want an answer. But this one did. It answered. Oh, my name is Drew. I mean, most people would probably yell, dude, run! And make a beeline for the front door or back door. I don't know. Well, this was an apartment, so it would either have been the window or the door. But Maddie, being the brave college junior that she is, she opened the door to the closet to find, no, not a ghost. No, not no one. Not an empty closet. But a 30-year-old male named Andrew Swafford standing in her closet. And he was wearing her clothes. Maddie stated that the man was wearing her socks, shoes, clothes, and even had a book bag full of clothes in his hand. Now, I've got nothing against cross-dressing. You do what you got to do. Do what you want to do. I've got nothing against it. Hey, it's 2019. More power to you. But what a situation. So Maddie contacted her boyfriend and then talked to Drew. I mean, pretty calm, cool, and collected. I don't know what her major is, but she should be in psychology at this point. Contacted her boyfriend and then talked to Drew to stall. Apparently, her boyfriend called the cops. Stall while help arrived. So, yes, Andrew was arrested and jailed. Get this, under a $26,000 bond on 14 felony charges. Felony charges, including larceny and identity theft. I mean, this story just broke today, so I don't have too many more details, but I'm amazed at this. 14 felonies. So obviously the big mystery here is, how did the guy get into the apartment? Now, the girls that live there, so they live in this apartment. It's right next to the college campus. They say that their door is always locked, and there was no signs of forced entry. And to make this even more interesting, back on December 19th, two men were found sitting in her apartment, and she contacted the leasing office, who stated for this story that after that incident, the locks had been changed. Well, I'm going to call that one out. I'm going to say, no, they didn't. No, they didn't. So something is really fishy here, but all Maddie can do is fear for her safety, and probably, I don't know, if I was her, I'd probably burn all my clothes at this point. I mean, so this is one of those things. This is why I and many others out there always say, I don't fear ghosts, but I'm always keeping an eye out on the living. And this is a, yeah, this is a why. Yeah, I'm not sure about the felony. 14 felonies. That's a lot. That's a lot. I don't know. I want to look more into this story, but I just thought it was like, wow, thought it was a ghost, and it turns out to be a cross-dresser in your closet. Coming out of the closet, I guess, in more ways than one. So now we move to other news. On that note, there is absolutely no way for me to provide a segue to this following story other than saying, I don't know, bear? I don't know, barely there? I don't know what. But anyway, you've probably heard this one, and I just realized that I've not been sharing links this entire time. Shame on me. See, I've been out of practice here. I haven't been on doing this for a couple of weeks, so let me backlink some of these stories. So if you do listen to the show live, what I do sometimes is during the course of the show, I will throw the links to these stories that I've collected so that you can go back and you can check them out yourself. Granted, I mean, who doesn't know how to use Google nowadays or look things up? I get that. But looking at my resources, and also sometimes I'll also throw in some photographs from some of these stories as well, so you can see some of the stuff I'm talking about. Now, you wouldn't want to see this dude that was in this closet. Trust me, it was a little spooky looking, and he wasn't a ghost. But sometimes I'll share some of those things, but I fear not. If you're not listening live in the chat room and you're missing these links, don't worry. Because throughout the week, through my social media of Facebook and of Twitter, I'll be sending out those links pretty much one a day. And so Twitter and Facebook. And it's facebook.com/ParanewsInsider. Just look up Paranews Insider. Twitter at Paranews Insider. And yeah, I stopped updating my Google Plus, my G Plus, I don't know, months ago. And it's getting closed down in April. No fooling.
I
don't know. Just never really took off. Kind of a joke. But anyway, that's my social medias, basically Facebook and Twitter. If you're interested in following this stuff or getting caught up on what I'm talking about. And some of these stories, like the one I just talked about, probably be hitting some of the mainstream stuff in the next couple of days or so. But I got that one a little quicker than everybody else. But anyway, one last story. Well, two stories here. This one here I want to talk about. I already put the link in the chat room. But it's one of the more interesting stories in the last couple of weeks. And again, it's one that I'm sure a lot of people have heard, but I think there's a little bit of confusion about this. And people really aren't stepping back and thinking about the whole story. And a lot of people are getting this information wrong. Newscasters are not doing their homework. Journalists are not journaling, whatever that is. They're not really looking into the facts here. So anyway, this 3-year-old boy went missing while playing in his grandmother's backyard. This is back on January 22nd. Tuesday, January 22nd. So Casey Lynn Hathaway disappeared from his grandmother's backyard in North Carolina while playing with other children back on Tuesday, January 22nd. Numerous levels of people joined in the search for the young boy, including the Craven County Sheriff's Office, the FBI, state investigators, and even the U.S. Marine Corps. Many stories said that the young boy miraculously survived temperatures as low as 17 degrees. Wow. If only that were true. It wasn't true. It was that cold that day, but this was actually the night preceding the boy's disappearance, not the actual night he disappeared. So if you look up the weather in Craven County on the 22nd, yes, it was 17 degrees at about midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. Not to say it was any that much warmer, because it was in the low 30s, which is not cool for a 3-year-old kid to be out in. Granted, he was dressed for that weather, but during the day, which is still miraculous. I'm not taking anything away from his ability to have survived this incident. I mean, even an adult in this same situation may not have made it, to be plainly honest here. I've seen a lot of other stories where people died of exposure that were in shape in their 20s and were wearing about the same amount of clothing as this little boy. So the weather during that time, yeah, it would have been very cold, temperatures in the low 30s. Overnight would have stayed about the same with temperatures slowly warming up overnight. Actually, by the morning, 7 a.m., which is typically the coldest part of any day, right before the sun comes up, was actually reaching the 40s by then. And on that would have been on Wednesday. After that, temperatures ended up reaching the 60s and did not dip below the 50s until he was found. Now, the problem with all that was he was wet. And again, even a 20-year-old might have had a hard time surviving in that. And it wasn't just the temperatures. It was wet. The landscape was pretty difficult. Even the responders were having a hard time getting around. You know, the good thing about it being in the woods, you might have bought him a few degrees. Definitely cut down a wind chill. And it was a good thing he was dressed for that weather, because if he was dressed for a little warmer weather than was out in colder weather, it wouldn't have been good. So sometime on Thursday, I still don't have a time frame, Casey was found when searchers heard someone calling for their mother. And again, he was found wet, cold, and scratched up, and was covered in vines and thorns. He had wandered about a half mile from his grandmother's house in the woods, with swampy areas, and the person who found him said that he had to go through a lot of water to find him. And yeah, this is a this is one of those feel-good stories, but it was one statement. The story was already popular at the time of this boy's disappearance. I remember getting reading about this already, and this is before the statement was made, so I was already aware of the story. It was all over the news already, but the boy's aunt that she sent the story beyond national news into the depths of the paranormal. Brianna Hathaway posted on Facebook, quote, "Casey is healthy, smiling, and talking. He said he hung out with a bear for 2 days. God sent him a friend to keep him safe. God is good God. Miracles do happen," unquote. So the case had already had some suspicions that some people were thinking that maybe the boy was abducted and then dumped into the woods hours before being found, as there's no way a 3-year-old could survive in the woods that long under those conditions. But this was put to rest as it was revealed that Casey did have minor frostbite from being out in the elements, and his core temperature was very low when he was found. The other obvious thing here that got a lot of attention was what he told his mom in the hospital, that he had hung out with a bear for 2 days, and somehow his aunts got a hold of this information and put it on Facebook, and then everybody knew about it. Yeah, bear for 2 days. Stephen Colbert jumped onto this story on his show with his monologue during his show, and several newspapers picked up this angle of the story. So again, everyone was already talking about this. Then all of a sudden, this bear thing derailed it and went into a completely different direction. Now, a lot of paranormal news sites were quick to jump on the fact that bears are in hibernation in January. This is what they were all saying, but with the climate of coastal North Carolina, not all bears probably were entering a true hibernation of being buried in a den asleep. That's not, not all black bears do that. It would have been a black bear. If bears are hibernating, then maybe this boy, yep, this is what everyone's saying. Maybe he found a Bigfoot. Maybe Bigfoot was hanging out with him. Lauren Coleman of the International Cryptozoology Museum, generally a pretty even-keeled guy, when it comes to stuff like this. He even jumped on this hypothesis with his Facebook post, which he said, quote, Sasquatch researchers suggest that the boy may have been in the care of an animal that he called a bear because he didn't know what a Sasquatch or even an ape was, if it was one, unquote. I don't know. Three-year-old kids, have you seen the clothes these kids wear? I mean, it's either dinosaurs, apes. I don't know. This kid's got to know what a Bigfoot is. I mean, three-year-old kid, I'm sure he's seen some TV shows. I'm sure he's seen some movies in his time. I mean, 3 years old. I'm sure he knows what this stuff is. But even then, I mean, if it was a Bigfoot taking care of this boy, it didn't really do that good of a job. Might be a lawsuit here. Because the boy, again, was found wet, cold. He was tangled in briar thorns. He was partially, you know, just partially buried, basically. He wasn't really doing too good. In a little bit more time, he might not have made it. Researchers say there is no evidence that a bear was present beyond the boy's story. So no one has officially interviewed the boy as of yet. And he will eventually undergo a forensic psychological exam when officials feel he has recovered. I mean, I don't know. I kind of thought about this, and maybe it's possible he stumbled into a den where a bear was hibernating. And maybe that's how he made it through the night. You know, the first night would have been the worst, would have been the coldest. 2 days is a long time for a three-year-old boy to be anywhere alone. And I would think that this bear story, really, in my opinion, is probably a byproduct of the fear and the loneliness that he suffered while out in the elements. He may stick with it and say that he was definitely with a bear. Maybe he believes it because that's just how he coped with it mentally. But the great thing here is that he was found and survived being lost in some tough elements. Sinkholes, ponds, marshy areas. And again, that initial night of cold in the woods. So, good story turned out about Bigfoot. I'm not sure. Not sure about all that. So, we had a good note there, but we're going to end kind of on a sad note. And I don't know, maybe a conspiracy theory type of thing, because it's not really my cup of tea, but this is an awful interesting story that I'm not sure if you've heard about. I mean, I've always thought that this is going to happen eventually. I've heard some people that have done this to an extent, not like this guy did, and made it back. But this gentleman, unfortunately, it didn't turn out so well for him. One thing that people like to do when they go out west is visit places like Area 51. Well, not Area 51 itself, but explore the area that leads to it. And seeing the barbed wire fences and the patrols that make sure no one accesses the actual facility illegally. Now, yeah, I've heard and read a few stories where people just decided to drive into these places to see how far they could get, which is usually not too far. Before being stopped and escorted back out, if you're lucky. Well, one Iowa man took things a little too far back on January 28th of this year, and sadly, it cost him his life. 27-year-old Nicky Leo Dwayne Graves drove up to the main security gate at the Nevada National Security Site located in Mercury, Nevada, about 65 miles northwest of Las Vegas, at about 5:18 Pacific time. Instead of stopping, Graves drove through the checkpoint, and security officers alerted the Nye County Sheriff's Office substation, which is located on the base. There was a subsequent chase. The chase lasted about 8 miles from the gate, where then Graves stopped his vehicle and exited. Officers gave him verbal commands, which he ignored. Officers noted a cylindrical object in Graves' hands, and a 43-year-old, 16-year police veteran of the sheriff's office and a security protective force officer were left with no choice but to open fire after giving further demands that were again ignored. Graves died at the scene, and the FBI is now conducting an investigation into the incident. So the FBI is there because it's a federal facility. There's still no word on what Graves was carrying, because they said he had a cylindrical object in his hand. But to ignore the commands of police and security, not a very smart thing to do. I think we should have learned this over the last few years of all these shocking stories of, you know, what people, some people say police brutality. But again, you know, you should obey commands. Just do what you're asked to do. Especially on federal land that houses potentially nuclear weapons and nuclear testing facility like this. That's not a smart idea. So the Nevada National Security Site is a 1,360 square mile facility and is the primary home of the nation's underground nuclear testing program. The National Nuclear Security Administration, a Department of Energy agency, oversees that location. And I haven't heard too much more out of this story. They were looking for a cam, you know, from the vantage point of one of these officers. But unfortunately, due to it being a federally controlled facility with potential secrets there, they're not allowed to have the cameras. So yeah, you don't want to trespass federal ground, and especially approach an officer with something in your hand. That's not smart to do. But anyway, that's the news for tonight. Rest easy tonight, and we will see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.